Today's program is brought to you by Tabard Inn, new American cuisine in one of Washington, D.C.'s oldest hotels, located in DuPont Circle. For more information, visit tabardinn.com.
I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And I'm Mary Izette.
From The Mad About It. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn.
If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Love Bites is produced by Heritage Radio Network, a nonprofit, member-supported radio station devoted to all things food. Help keep HRN alive by becoming a member today. Go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the beating heart to donate. Do it now and we will love, love, love you. Welcome to Love Bites, coming at you live from Heritage Radio Network. Today is Monday, August 1st. I'm one of your hosts, Jacqueline Raposo. I write about people who make food. You can find me as at wordsfoodart.com. I'm 35, straight and single.
You're so old now.
Oh, hush, you've got a week.
I know. Well, now I won't be 35, but I am your other host, for those of you who don't know me, Ben Rosenblatt.
It's been a while since you've been here.
It's
welcome
been
back.
So long. Thank you for the warm welcome. I am an actor, writer, occasional bartender, and server. You can check me out at benrosenblattactor.com. I am 33 still, straight, and
not
currently single.
Oh, we've got so much to talk about. Later in the show, we're going to be joined by Dr. Cheryl Kingsburg of University Hospitals Case Medical Center. We're going to talk to her about why some of us get particularly frisky in the summer.
I don't know who you're talking about.
And how a lack of libido affects women and men alike. But first, let's quickly start off the show with the best thing we ate this week so that we can talk about food since we are a food radio station.
God, I love food.
Why don't you go first?
So my girlfriend she is a subscriber to Blue Apron.
Oh, fun.
Yes. And so we have had a couple like really great meals this week, but the best one was this like buttermilk fried chicken biscuit sandwich with a collard green and like ginger carrot slaw.
That sounds good.
And it was like mouthwatering.
That sounds really good.
Yeah.
That sounds really good. I did not make mine this week. I've not been cooking much. So I went to Spain for a couple of days.
Oh, just a quick trip to Spain.
It was actually a little surreal that I flew for a day to be there for 2 days to fly back for a day.
But you must have had like so many great meals
there. I had
there.
So many great meals, but the best thing I had was at Arola restaurant. It's in the Hotel Arts in Barcelona, and it's Serge Arola's menu, but it was Mauro Ciccarelli, who's the chef de cuisine there.
Ciccarelli. I don't know why I said it like an Italian.
No, it is Italian.
Oh, okay.
I did have
there
to ask
go.
Him.
Okay.
He's not from Spain or Italy, but an incredible, incredible cook, lovely person. We worked together a little bit there for a piece coming out for Savor. But the best, the thing that I ate in the entire weekend that I wanted to keep on eating was his creamy basil rice. It was part of the tasting menu that he just kept sending out dishes. But they use a lot of their own herbs, and it's sort of a modernist cuisine menu, but everything was beautiful, and I was like, oh, this isn't going to taste as good as it looks. And everything was so poignantly flavored. And this creamy basil rice, it was so, so basil-y and so fresh and bright that I ate the entire serving of what was served to me versus everything else. I was dining alone. I couldn't eat everything that was served to me. This one, I ate every bite, and 2 days ago when I was not feeling well in bed, I was like, I just want creamy basil rice. It was delicious. So,
Arola
restaurant in the Hotel Arts.
The food you had in Spain was Italian food.
I guess sort of. I don't know. Yeah, it was just.
Did you have any Spanish food?
I did. I had the best tortilla of my life at Le Eggs restaurant. It's Paco Perez restaurant. Best egg I've had in my life was the just tortilla with mushrooms.
Wow.
Yeah. It was really,
that
really good.
That sounds awesome. And did you have any, romantic?
No, I worked my ass off. I was only there for 2 days, and I'm still exhausted. I got back Tuesday, and I'm still exhausted. I did a lot of interviews. I'm doing a market piece. I went to 4 markets. I walked a shitload. Learned a lot about Gaudi. I had a great trip, but it was a lot of work.
You're sitting up too straight. Let's get you a pillow and have you lay back a little bit.
Anywho, let's start talking about some of these things going on in our lives. So, Ben, you're in a relationship. I turned 35 across the world. Let's talk. So what have you been dealing with? What have you learned about yourself recently? with, we've talked on the show about you transitioning into the idea of being in a relationship. So what feels like a big win for you, or like a hard win for you over the past couple of weeks?
I don't know that I have any like things that I would consider lifelong victories yet, but I have things that I am like improving on and that are probably things that for me...
You are perfect, Ben. You don't need to improve on anything. I'm just kidding.
I'm perfect?
You are perfect in my eyes.
Oh, good. All right, then what are you working on?
Okay.
I would just say that for me, I think the things that I am working on in my life are probably going to be the things that I'm working on for the rest of my life or for a lot of my life.
Like what?
Well, I'm working on right now the... I think... For a long time, I've been waiting for things to come into my life that will help me realize what I want instead of deciding what I want and making a choice and taking it.
Right.
Because I don't know how to know exactly what I want. Follow your heart is sort of a, like, for example, relationship, like, I was waiting for someone to come into my life who was going to be the
like
person who I would know for
right
certain
and,
that
yeah.
I wanted and that, like, it would make commitment, which is a challenge for me, feel easy. And I am coming to grips with the fact that that is not probably...
In this circumstance happening.
Well,
I feel like it does happen for a lot of people, which is why we have that instinct to be like, oh, when I meet the person, it'll like even nothing is perfect, but it'll feel right. And we'll work at the things that we need to work on because it'll feel.
Yes.
Right.
But I think even for those people, they probably know on some level or want on some level, they know that they want a
right.
relationship
right.
that is going to last a long, long time. I don't even like.
Know that that's necessarily true.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like it could be true. And,
right.
But. Anything could be true. I could fantasize about many, many different lives. I could see myself going down many, many different paths. And I've been, like I said, waiting for something or someone or, a sign of some kind to tell me which path to go down. And I don't think I'm ever going to find that. I think I have to choose a path.
And so you
and then,
chose a path?
And so while I'm choosing so far
Being
this relationship
it?
With my girlfriend.
With your girlfriend.
And... That has presented, it's like confronted me with many things inside myself and challenges, but it's also been rewarding in many ways.
What's been the biggest reward?
There are several rewards that are large. One is that it's nice to
Listeners,
have...
He has this like little smirk sort of on it. Like they're just the corners of your mouth turned up a little bit and your eyes just sort of glistened. And it's really... Nice to see.
Oh.
Yeah. When
well,
I
thank
asked
you.
What the
I enjoy
rewards
that.
Were. So, girlfriend,
nice
if you're listening,
you
there's a
happiness.
Yeah, there's a glint in his eyes, girlfriend.
I mean, one is that it's great to have, like, a person who's my person, you know, who's, like...
By the way, when did we all start saying my person? I feel like in the past year, I never heard that. And then a couple months ago, people are just like, oh, he's not my person or she's not my person. Like, when did this become...
I don't know. I got it from a friend of mine who... I didn't know that everyone said it, but I got it from a friend of mine.
Right. I didn't know that everybody said it until a friend said it, and now I'm hearing everybody say it. So, listeners, if you have an idea who started this whole my person thing,
I credit my friend Emily with it, even though it's probably not her, but I heard it from her first.
All right. So it's nice to have your person.
Yeah, it is. It's great to have, like, a person who's my confidant and my closest friend and also lover and person who I, like, get to tell all these amazing things to and then have great sex with.
I'm so jealous of the girlfriend.
You are, it's
like
different.
Being,
Jacqueline, don't, come on, don't pit yourself against her.
I know,
because
I'm
that's
not pitting myself against her. I just still want to be special.
You are so beyond special. That's why we're celebrating our birthdays together.
We are.
Tonight.
Today,
with
yes.
drink and food and all sorts of stuff. What are you working on? What are you working like? This totally turned
no,
like
but
about
I interrupted
like, the, what
you
is
because
the
I
ben
made it about me
show.
When it's about you and you should be celebrating that she is your closest friend. So I selfishly made it about me in that moment, but it's just because I love you that much.
Well, I love you too. And that's why I'm asking you what you're working on.
Oh,
these
okay.
Days.
So today was supposed to be the day that I was going to go back on social media. And I did check in with it last night when I was like, all right, it's time. And I checked in with it and I was debating about continuing on with it for 90 days because now my biggest win is that it's been a really phenomenal 40 days. I've been happier. I have felt more connected with human beings. I have felt more connected with absence of something to do, that when I'm walking my dog, I'm not checking social media. So I don't even bring my phone half the time. There's no reason for me. Like, I don't play games on my phone. So other than talking, texting, or checking email, I don't really have a reason to be looking at. Like, I'm not going to be browsing websites, you know, other than checking the weather when I'm walking my dog,
sure,
or sitting
none
somewhere.
Of us do. We're all just addicts,
right? So yeah, like, I didn't realize how addicted to, like, how much of just a habit it had become. And so going off of it was hard to begin with, but then it became extremely fulfilling that, like, I was stuck in the airport in Sweden for hours coming back from Spain, and I was not bored or sad or and it was my birthday. So I was, like, traveling the entire day of my birthday, and it wasn't like, oh, I can't check Facebook to see what people are saying, and I can't check, like, people. I had internet, so people were texting me and emailing me. And
were you getting notifications from Facebook?
No, because I turned all that stuff off.
Okay.
So I hadn't been at all.
So that would
all.
Be tempting, right?
Nah, I no. Didn't, I guess maybe, but, like, in general, the past 40 days, it's sort of amplified the good things happening and also made me face the absence. Like, when I'm sick at home and alone, I have to face the fact that I'm sick and home and by myself, rather than looking for this false sense of connection with people. And I actually feel a lot more connected and feel
that makes a lot
like
of
I face the bad things more honestly. And but even more so than that, I'm just reveling in good things. Like, I'm having better conversations. Friends are calling me. I'm calling friends. We're emailing each other. Plenty of people reached out to me on my birthday. You know, like, it's not like. It's not like that got taken away. In traveling, I was taking pictures and not spending the time to post them to Instagram. So I was just taking a picture to capture it and then continuing on. There was nothing pulling me to this little machine. And so I'm going to keep on going and doing it for 90 days. And
can you point to any challenges or drawbacks or anything that's, like, a negative about it?
Definitely with work, it's harder. That, like, when I did go on yesterday, I realized that, like, I had lost around the same amount of Twitter followers that I would have lost anyway, and then I gained a lot too, so that sort of was normal. But, like, my I forget how they call it on Facebook, but just, like, the engagement of people with my pieces was lower,
like, on your business Facebook
page. And then on Twitter, like, there just wasn't I mean, like, there was a crap load of people who had followed or unfollowed or who had retweeted stuff, but I didn't care, honestly. Like, when I went on, like, I didn't find it as fun as I thought it would. It was more like I just found myself being on it and not wanting to be on it. So
what's the next step in your
abstinence? No shopping today, starting today, no superfluous shopping. So if I need toothpaste or shampoo, but I can't buy, like, I went to the Strand today with my friend Rose, who's in the studio right now, and I could not buy myself a book, and I can't go buy lipstick or shoes or
I'm going to tempt you with,
I'm sure
things.
It's going to be hard. I think this is going to be harder than social media. So for 90 days, I can't buy anything other than essentials, including food, which is going to be a hard thing for me. Like, I bought squash blossoms at the farmer's market the other day, knowing that I probably wasn't going to have the energy to cook them, but I wanted them, so I bought them. Now, with this form of abstinence, I will not buy them.
What is going to be the toughest thing for you not to go shopping for?
I don't know. I hadn't thought.
Like,
about
are you a big like? What do you shop for normally? Like, what do you
tiny, tiny little things that feel special?
Like trinkets?
Like a body lotion, a bubble bath, a lipstick, a new like something small. It's never anything big. Yeah. It's silly girly stuff.
Can you buy presents for other people?
I can buy presents for other people.
I just
want
to make sure that I'm, like, getting something.
You do, and I'm going to Portugal for 3 weeks, and so I'm going to be buying presents. Yeah, there's all that kind of stuff. But yeah, also listeners, I just bought the URL myyearofabstinence.com because I'm going to be doing different things throughout the rest of the year, and I'm going to start putting my journals about the social media
stuff
on.
Notice how sex is not on the list. I just am pointing out.
Sex is accidentally on the list. That's what my roommate said. She's like, well, if you say abstinence, people are going to think you're not having sex. It's like, well, I'm not having sex anyway because I've also been off dating. Apps for the past 40 days. So, yeah. So, Jacqueline is
I think
not
you can find a sex partner in real life.
I should. That
we should find you one at night when we're out, like, for our birthdays, and we're like, after we're like
I am not
six or seven drinks deep.
I'm not adverse to that.
I'm going to start, like,
it's been a while
calling
and I do
guys
get,
over for you.
And I do get Randy in the summers, as we're going to talk about with Dr. Kinsberg after the break. But before we get to that, next season, we are sort of switching up how we produce Love Bites. We're sort of coming up with these awesome topics and what that'll be doing over the course of a couple weeks, and then bringing guests on to speak about that.
It's getting that much better, folks.
I'm so excited about this idea. So like in October, we're going to have, you know, psychics and tarot readers on. We're going to do a whole series about technology and relationships. During the holidays, we're going to have people of different religious ordinances coming on to talk about how their religions speak to relationships. But we'd love to hear from you guys about what you really like about our interviews and what you think we might be able to focus on a little bit more. Do you like the takeaways that we give as far as things that you can try out at home? Would you rather us just focus on the individuals and getting their opinions just as human beings, a little bit less about their profession? If you could give us some insight as we craft our next season starting in September, I would really appreciate that. You can email us at lovebitesradio@gmail.com. Since I'm not going to be on Facebook and Twitter for a while, that's probably the best way to get to us. But yeah, we'd really appreciate it. So stick around, because after the break, we are coming back with Dr. Cheryl Kinsberg.
The following program has been brought to you by Tabard Inn. Tabard Inn, Washington, D.C.'s quintessential small hotel, is located on a quiet, tree-lined street just 5 blocks from the White House. Vibrant yet unassuming, the Tabard is comprised of 40 sleeping rooms, each unique in character and design. Feast on eclectic American cuisine in their acclaimed restaurant, or enjoy a cocktail and listen to live jazz in one of their cozy Victorian seating areas. Mingle with travelers from around the world who find the Tabard the only place to stay when taking their travels to Washington. For more information, visit tabardinn.com.
Dr. Cheryl Kinsberg wanted to be the next Joan Rivers. Instead, she turned her love of comedy and warm humor to the field of medicine, believing that separating physical care from psychological care does patients a disservice. She intertwines cognitive behavioral therapy and psychology with treatment for women working through postpartum depression, infertility, cancer, and sexual dysfunction. Dr. Kinsberg is the chief of the Division of Behavioral Medicine, Department of OBGYN at University Hospital's Case Medical Center in Cleveland, Ohio, and we are so excited to have her on the show today. Welcome to Love Bites, Dr. Kinsberg.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
I just want to start off by asking, because Jacqueline mentioned it earlier, and she's getting a little rosy-cheeked right now.
Yeah.
Is there any sort of scientific explanation as to why many people get friskier in hotter weather?
Well, we don't have any accurate scientific data to explain that, but there are some pretty good reasons why people seem to have higher sex drive in warmer weather. First of all, think about what you wear. I don't know what you have on at this very minute. I'll try not to imagine. But I have a sleeveless top on, as opposed to the middle of winter when I will have a turtleneck, a sweater, a flannel, and when it's time to go to bed, I climb under several layers of covers. So that, you know, if you just think about what we're wearing, we're a little bit more alluring. We have a little bit more skin to show. We tend to feel sexier with less clothes on. But it's always within context, because too much of a good thing is not a good thing. If it's 100 degrees out and humid, the last thing we want is to get too close to somebody. So there is sort of the ideal temperature where we feel sexy, want to take our clothes off instead of jumping under warm flannel sheets. That's the most likely explanation.
Do you know what that temperature, I just want to know what that average is as far as
what's the tipping point?
What are the odds? Yeah, like what's the best time to be like, chances are I'm going to get lucky.
You know, it varies from person to person because it depends on what climate you're used to. And it also, you know, we talk about a dry heat versus humidity. So it really is very variant. But let's just say as humans, we tend not to like things above 90 degrees. And certainly as somebody in Cleveland, Ohio, I'm perfectly happy if it's not under 70. So that's the Kinsberg level, but it does vary from person to person.
Gentlemen,
just so you know. Well, let's flip to the polar opposite. What about those of us with low libidos? Aside from things that we can sort of expect, like going through an illness or aging, how much of the way in which we are or are not drawn to having a high sex drive is hardwired in us genetically?
Well, I won't say it's genetic, although there probably are some genetic explanations. There are biologic underpinnings, whether or not it's specifically DNA-driven, hard to know. But we're all born with a certain level of drive. Some of us have really high drive. Every day would barely be enough. Some of us once a week, some of us once a month, and some of us every leap year would probably be the range. And when we think about what's normal, it's what's normal for us. So if you have low drive and you're not bothered by it, that's your normal, and we wouldn't pathologize it, we wouldn't label it. If you're distressed by it because you used to have good drive or you would like to have better drive, then we would think about treating it. But some of that sort of basic drive, just like our other drives of hunger for food, you know, some of us, I could eat ice cream every day, and some of us would be perfectly fine once a week. So there's a range. Men, on average, tend to have a little higher drive as a population than women do, but that also varies, because I certainly see lots of heterosexual couples who come in with the opposite. But it does vary, and we all are born with a certain biologic basic sort of baseline level.
So when patients come to you about having what they feel is a low sex drive, is it coming from a place of a feeling of inadequacy in their relationships, or because of what they think how they think they should be performing? Or is it because, like you'd said, some people aren't bothered by having a low sex drive? So is it really about sort of feeling like they're doing something wrong or are abnormal? Or is it a lot about a personal struggle that they do want to change?
It takes a lot for a woman to seek help for having low desire. We don't acknowledge women's sexuality very well. It's only been in the last few years that women have been sort of told by our culture that it's appropriate and okay to claim their sexuality. So women are not driven to me or to their healthcare professionals because of a sort of a cultural norm that says you should want this. And I get a lot of backlash that says, you know, by virtue of saying we have treatments for female sexual dysfunctions and low sexual desire, you're automatically telling women they should. And I don't need to tell women they should. They come in absolutely devastated when they had drive and they've lost it. These are women who want to want, and they are absolutely devastated by the fact that they've lost it. This is something they want very much.
How do you explain oftentimes the loss of it? What is... Is that a biological thing as well? Is it a mental thing? Is it a combination?
There is a combination. It's a big word, but we consider sexual desire to be based on a biopsychosocial concept. That is, there are psychological factors and biologic factors that contribute to one's sexual desire for both men and women. And so when there is a problem, when there's a change in sexual desire, we look at both areas to see what could be the underlying source. So for some women, it really is a neurochemical change that we know, just like with depression, there are neurotransmitters that impact mood, and so they also impact desire. And in fact, it's a nice model to consider, because when you think about what the chief complaints are of depression, it is a loss of interest in things that used to bring you pleasure and the loss of motivation to do things that are otherwise rewarding. So when we think about low sexual desire, it's essentially the same thing except related to sex. The loss of interest in something that used to bring you pleasure and the loss of motivation to seek out something that is otherwise rewarding. So that's a neurochemical issue. We also know that hormones are related to sexual desire. So some women may experience a change in hormones, some in neurochemistry, and also on the psychological aspect, certainly relationship factors. You could have all the biologic drive in the world, but if you don't like your partner, you're not necessarily going to want to sleep with that person. So there are, or if you're stressed by work, or, you know, if you are feeling depressed by other things, those are factors that contribute to loss of desire on the psychological aspect. So there are combinations, and it really doesn't take much for a good clinician to be able to tease out what are the components that are being affected, so that gears what treatment might look like.
So outside of reproducing, which is, you know, one of the main biological needs of, or the biological functions of sex, and pleasure. Are there any others? Is there, why do human beings, what is it about us that when we start to feel a lower sex drive that it bothers us so much? I mean, yes, it's a pleasure that we're missing out on. How does, wrapped up is that in our, like our identity and all of that?
Well, you've just answered a lot of the your own question, which is sexuality impacts our entire quality of life. So, do we need it to survive? Absolutely not. Other than for procreation and actually working in a fertility practice, we don't even need it for procreation either. Right. However, we enjoy sexuality, and if you didn't enjoy it in the first place and now it's gone, then it's not distressing to you. And that's not a problem, but it certainly can impact our health because good sex leads to feeling better about ourselves. It's actually a nice way to burn some calories. It gives us better self-esteem, and I can show you in the opposite. We have good data, and I've published some data showing the impact of low sexual desire or the loss of sexual desire on self-esteem, on mood, on relationships, on body image, on communication within the relationship. So sexual problems have a much bigger impact well outside the bedroom than just having an impact on sexuality.
Is there, just to sort of to re-ask this question in a slightly different way, we've talked on the show how I'm not going to have children. I don't plan to. I can't, but I also don't want to. And I've read studies about how because of not having children, I'm potentially at a higher risk for having breast cancer. I don't know exactly how true that is, but I've read that in several things. So is there that kind of connection for not having sex on a biological level that like, oh, if you don't orgasm regularly or you don't have, that type of, those things that fire up in your brain when you're having sex, that there's an effect on something like, I don't know, your metabolism or your serotonin or your whatever. Is there any sort of connection in that way to the act of having sex?
No, okay, no. Thinking about being an oviparous woman or somebody who's never had a pregnancy, it's not even having the children, it's having the pregnancy that is actually the risk factor. So early having early onset of menarche and late onset of menopause. So it's all about ovulation and hormones and not necessarily having children.
Oh, that makes me feel better. Thank
that
you.
That can drive you crazy maybe, but no.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So for those of our listeners who might not know, what exactly is hypoactive sexual desire disorder? Listeners, that's HSDD. And who does it most commonly affect?
Well, hypoactive sexual desire disorder is the sexual dysfunction that relates to the persistent loss of sexual desire. So not thinking about it, not wanting it, not being interested in it, not having sexual thoughts, fantasies, the hunger for sexuality. So that's the definition along with the key component of having distress by it. So being personally distressed is what keys in whether you meet the criteria for a diagnosis. So we would never diagnose somebody who has no desire or who has lost their desire, who's not bothered by it. And I know that some people get confused by the concept of causing personal versus interpersonal distress. Interpersonal distress really is the downstream effect of having loss of desire, because what we know is that when sex is good in a relationship, it's good. It adds some value. But when sex is bad or non-existent, it plays an inordinately powerful role, draining many relationships of good intimacy. So what I see in my practice are women can come in and say, I've been in other relationships before and we had great sex, but that wasn't enough to keep us together. When I found out maybe they were a Republican or they were a Democrat, that was it. No matter how good the sex, that was it. But what I see are couples who come in and say everything else in my relationship is good, but we're struggling with our sexuality, and that has a huge impact. But really, it's the key of personal distress. The women who come in say, I want my sex drive back. I want to want it back. And that's the key for HSDD or hypoactive sexual desire disorder.
How do we look at this? You mentioned, couples coming in. How do we look at, and you also mentioned earlier that we look at women and men differently as far as their sex drive. So when talking about treatment, like people have been talking about Viagra for a long time, and we could say that it unfairly puts pressure on men to be sexually active, you know, even as they age, and that we sort of question virility for men differently than women. But why do you think there's been less attention to this aspect of sexuality for women compared to men regarding sex drive?
For a couple of reasons. First of all, Viagra, or the PDE5 inhibitors, so Viagra, Cialis, Levitra, have been around since 1998. So, you know, 18 years, 17 years, they've been around. And prior to that, you know, men with erectile dysfunction were told, guess what, it's all in your head. It wasn't until we had pharmacologic options that we recognized that there were biological factors that we could treat to help these men. And also, our culture has really had a double standard when it's come to sexuality. We've thought about men as being entitled to their sexuality, and women, it's really been underground. It's our cultural determination of what's okay and what's normal. Women's sexuality really has gone underground. Women who like sex were often labeled as sort of nymphomaniacs. So it's only been in the last several years that we have sort of normalized the idea that women are entitled to a healthy sexual life. We've also had no pharmacologic treatments. We've had psychotherapy for a long time. Look, I'm a psychologist. I treat low sexual desire, and I've been treating women with sexual problems for a long time. And hypoactive sexual desire disorder, by the way, is the most common female sexual dysfunction, whereas premature ejaculation and erectile dysfunction, which are related to the physiology of the penis, so it's way more south than HSDD, which is really in one's head, because the most important sex organ is in the brain. And it's been harder to develop treatments for female sexual dysfunction, but we now have the first approved pharmacologic option for HSDD, which opens the door for many physicians who otherwise were uncomfortable talking about it to now address sexual concerns of their patients, because we do know it's a biopsychosocial model. Some women will respond to, just like with depression, psychotherapy. Some will respond to a pharmacologic option, and some will benefit from the combination. And it's nice to have options for these women who otherwise were left sort of adrift, not knowing where to go if they had a sexual concern. They didn't know who to ask.
Do we know what causes HSDD?
Well, given that there are biopsychosocial concepts, there is not one cause. It's not a one-size-fits-all. So there are psychological aspects that might be contributing to low sexual desire, like the relationship issues. But really, for the true condition of HSDD, which actually rules out relationship factors, it is likely either a neurochemical imbalance and/or some hormonal changes. So there are a variety of underlying biologic causes.
So because women aren't as openly conditioned to talk about their sexual lives, what would you say to women who are agonizing over their low sex drive to help them, you know, sort of come out to their OBGYN and ask for help? What's a piece of advice for them, or a comforting word for them?
I would say that this is so important to your life. You are entitled to a healthy sexual life, and your OBGYN or your primary care healthcare professional, whether it's your physician or nurse practitioner, really is the first person who is responsible for your sexual health. The World Health Organization has really put it into the laps of the healthcare professional to take care of women and men's sexual lives, and so that you're entitled to get this treatment. You're entitled to ask, and if you feel like your healthcare professional is uncomfortable, then find another one, because it is so important to your overall quality of life that you should be entitled to get this treated. Now, you shouldn't have to be the one to ask. You shouldn't. Your healthcare professional should be asking you, what sexual concerns do you have? And if they're not opening the door, you should feel free to open it for them, and if you're uncomfortable with that, find a healthcare professional who will.
I want to add an amen onto that. That was delightful. Thank you, Dr. Gainsburg. Before we let you go, we started the show talking about, since we are a food radio station, just talking about the best thing that Ben and I ate this past week. Do you have just something delicious that you dined out eating or ate at home that you want to share with us?
I certainly do. I had mentioned earlier that I have a higher drive for ice cream than many other people. I, in Cleveland, we have Mitchell's Ice Cream, which is probably the most delicious ice cream you'll ever have. And if you weren't going to come to Cleveland for any other reason, it would be a great reason to come. And I had one of their most phenomenal hot fudge sundaes because it's homemade hot fudge, homemade marshmallow, that warm, gooey marshmallow on top of it with the best homemade ice cream you have ever had. You have to come. It really is orgasmic.
Ooh. Well, I was just going to ask, are there any foods, in your opinion, that are good for the libido?
Well, I just gave you mine. it's a top secret. But
not anymore.
Whatever makes you feel good.
Wonderful.
Thank you so much.
Thank
we
you so
appreciate
much,
you being Andrew. On the show with us today. You were a great, great informative guest. Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much. This is such a fascinating topic. I hope that we're going to hit on this again. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Kingsburg.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Listeners, you can find more about Dr. Kingsburg's work on Twitter at Cheryl Kingsburg and links to her website at University Hospitals Case Medical Center on our website, lovebitesradio.com. That is our show for today. Next week, we're changing it up. We've got sommelier and author Diane McMartin of This Calls for a Drink calling into the show, and she's going to share the perfect wine to pair with things like heartbreak, growing into adulthood.
The strong ones. Whatever has the highest alcohol content.
Hurricane parties or embarrassing yourself in the great outdoors. Things like that. Her book is very fun. We're excited to have her on. Until then, thanks as always to our beautiful engineer, Pierre. Our theme song is Give Love by Josh Dion. And we are Jacqueline Raposo and Ben Rosenblatt. We'll be back at the same time next week here at heritageradionetwork.org.
Later.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.